So far away.
Are we ready? Okay. That's that time. Okay. Morning, everybody.
Thank you.
As we begin, let's begin the way we usually do anyway, of just getting yourself settled in your spot. Take a couple of deep breaths. Allow yourself to soften. Be open. Alert and relaxed at the same time. Knowing that whatever it is we need to learn this morning will be available to us on all levels of our being, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, consciously, as well as unconsciously. Another deep breath. You can open your eyes when you're ready. I'm not exactly sure why the screen is working the way it is right now, but I'm just going to let it go because the more important part is that we hear one another. We began and we ended last week with a short definitive phrase, if I can find it again. Here it is. Consciousness dictates form. Consciousness dictates form. As if, for instance, 20 minutes ago, this was just sort of an empty room. Nobody was, I was fiddling around online, but nobody else was doing anything. About 10 minutes ago, we changed the whole dynamics of what's going on in this room. It's no longer just. Actually, you probably even forget it's a room because our mind goes into a more higher spiritual realm of understanding. So I'm not attached to my surroundings. In fact, they become something very, either they become something very different or they become something that's irrelevant. I just think that one phrase says so much. Probably much more than I could express in word. Consciousness dictates form. The form of this room has changed because my consciousness has changed. That's true when you go home. It's true 5 minutes from now. It's true 15 minutes from now. Consciousness dictates form.
Jerry.
John, you look like you're going to say something.
Yeah, so
Hang on a second, John. I need to. Make you a little bit louder. Okay.
Okay, so this phrase reminds me of the law of attraction. Now, I've never really been able to to imagine wealth and receive it, but there have been years ago, I read a book that challenged us to think about something that was odd that we didn't normally run into, and to just keep thinking about it. And within a couple of days, according to this experiment, it would appear. And so, I mean, a typical thing would be something like a pink feather. I mean, you wouldn't see that every day. You wouldn't ordinarily run into one of those. But I did that experiment multiple times with different odd kinds of thoughts. And sure enough, within 2 or 3 days, I would see one. Now, had it already been there? Or had I created it? Or had I, because I was thinking about it, it changed my footsteps so that I actually went into the place where I would find it. Those are so, but that's what this reminds me of in some ways.
Yeah, you're right. Let me throw a hand grenade into the works for a moment.
No, let's not think about that.
Now, I just thought about this as I was listening to you, John. A Zen monk wakes up and said, "I was dreaming I was a butterfly. Now I'm wondering, am I a butterfly dreaming that I'm a man, or a man that I'm dreaming of a butterfly?" Get you. That fit, John? So it's really kind of interesting when we put ourselves in that position. Who's doing what? Consciousness dictates form. And what would it be like if I were to say, let's go back to the little Zen monk story, that I am both. I am a man dreaming I am a butterfly, and I'm also a butterfly dreaming I'm a man. And if we want to stretch that, I am God believing that I am God. I am God acting as if I am God. And I am also God being acted upon because. I remember in philosophy class years and years ago, a lot of early philosophers were attempting to describe what was going on with creation. How did that happen? And they invented a German word called Urstoff. And Urstoff was the prime matter for all material objects on Earth. And what happened was, let's suppose you have this like this lump of clay. This Urstuff. And the creator comes along and sort of pulls a piece of it out there and says, I'm going to make this into, like in the Old Testament, I'm going to take some dust, I'm going to take some dirt, I'm going to take some slime of the earth, and I'm going to make it into a human being. Now, what we're getting at, I believe, here is that we are doing that all the time. We are creating our reality all the time. And we don't realize that. We're not terribly conscious of that. So I think what we are asking ourselves this morning is, how can I remain as conscious as I possibly can that everything that I see, everything that I connect with, everything that I am aware of on planet Earth is part of my own creation, either as an individual or as a species? How can I, and so my question for myself is, how can I be more aware of that? Because aware, if it's true, and I believe it is, that consciousness dictates form, then I really need to be aware of what my conscious, where my consciousness or how my consciousness is directing me. And to realize that I have a choice about that. I'm not limited to, I'm not stuck in a particular form of reality. I have a choice about what and how I create. So I think there's an extreme, for me anyway, there's an extremely powerful lesson here, and it all stems from and with the idea or the sense of awareness. Let's again take, for example, this room here. Before you walked into this room, you were aware of yourself in a certain way of saying, I'm getting ready, maybe consciously or unconsciously, I'm getting ready to go into class. So the form that you were in at that particular time was getting ready for something. And then you walk through the door and you're no longer getting ready for something, you are in process. It's already happening. Before we open the book, before we say anything about it, it's already happening. And right now, as we are listening to and sharing with one another, it's still already happening. But we don't have to go, I don't have to go back. I wonder what John was talking about. Am I a butterfly thinking I'm a man, or a man thinking I'm a butterfly? What am I thinking about? What is it like to be just right here, right now? Consciousness dictates form, and the consciousness also dictates the formlessness of things. Am I open to my own creation at this moment? Am I at peace with my own creation in this moment? Is there anything else I need to do differently in this moment? You missed it, John. You started a whole revolution last week.
Oh, good.
When you said, consciousness dictates form. Remember And then I lost my place, but I'm not sure whether I did that on purpose or not. I am on page 52. Does that sound right? Okay, thank you. Because I really did lose my place. Anybody have anything you want to add to the mix before we get started on the book? Yes.
Reminds me, you used to say, the good news is you're not who you think you are, but you're not who you remember who you are.
Yeah. I've said that particular quote many times. I'm not sure where it even came from. Maybe I invented it myself. I'm not sure. But the good news is you're not who you think you are. The bad news is you've forgotten who you really are. That's not really bad news, but once you become aware that you've forgotten who you really are, you start waking up. I start becoming more and more of the reality of the truth of who I am. Again, again. Janet.
My dreams take me back to who I was.
Your what?
My dreams
Yeah.
take me back in time. They're almost every night.
When you say take you back to where you
That's
were.
right.
Okay.
Something, what I did or didn't do, right or wrong.
That's interesting because the next reading in this book is going to encounter that particular truth. It's going to talk about that. I don't usually read ahead, but I did a little bit this morning. And maybe that was the reason why.
Jerry.
Yes.
So years ago, I was part of a team. We were charged with transforming the company that we worked for. And we were working with a consultant who was helping us do this. And what we realized we had to do was not start by reorganizing the company, but start by changing the consciousness of the company. And we did that by involving and engaging everyone in different workshops where they where we played the, essentially we played the game SPOZE, SPOZE, and it means suppose, like the word is, And in these workshops, we would pretend that we thought these thoughts, that we behaved this way, that we had these values, that we understood that work works this way. It took over a year to completely change the organization, to transform it. And then we continue to use this, but it did happen. And the reason it happened, I truly believe, was because we were constantly playing suppose. Suppose that this was true. How would I behave? How would I act? What would I think? What would the truth be? And eventually, and one of the, this was at a time when white walls were very rare. We had put them all over the company. And we would suppose that instead of going into a meeting where everyone sat around and talked at each other, that we got up on white walls and we wrote different things down and we did this and we kept track of what we were doing and we took pictures of the white wall and recorded them. After a year and a half, 2 years, one day we realized that the company had been transformed. When we walked through the company and there were white walls everywhere with notes everywhere, with drawings everywhere on these white walls, and people were behaving in a totally different way. They were engaging with each other. Even the president, the CEO of the company, was engaging with people who were way down the line. It was all about collaboration. Anyway, the point being, if you suppose and you act that way, then eventually your thinking changes and you behave in different ways throughout your life. Thanks.
Thanks, John.
Jerry,
Yes.
the last was, I know we're starting on 52, I believe you said. The bottom of 51 is real pertinent.
Okay.
Okay.
Starting with the last paragraph or the rest?
Yeah. Yeah, well, right up above it when it says I am in a body. The body is hungry. And then it goes on to a few other things. But then just that last part of that very last larger paragraph.
You begin to concentrate on the manifestation of form and confuse it with who you are. A simple version of what John was talking about, I hope I'm not stepping on your toes, but I remember years ago, Leo Biscaglia, the love doctor, we taught a class in love, philosophy of love, at Berkeley. He did an experiment with his, one of his classes. He brought in a big roll of brown paper, pasted it up against one wall, did the same thing on another wall. And he said, "Okay, class, on the wall, the left-hand side wall, I want you to write down all the negative words you could possibly think of." So, it was anger, fear, war, violence, hatred, blah, prejudice, blah, blah, blah. Filled all, well. He said, "Now on this other wall here, I want you to write down all the positive things you can think of. Peace, love, joy, happiness, touch, feel, whatever." They completed both walls. He said, "Okay, now for the next month, you are forbidden to use any of the words over on the left-hand wall. Everything you say is going to have to be reflective of the right-hand wall over here, the positive ideas and positive. If you mess up, you have to put a quarter in the pot." They said these are graduate students; they were pretty poor, so they didn't want to spend a quarter wasting on time like that. He said, "You would be amazed. After a month of just focusing on positive words, there was a deliberate and positive change in everyone." He said, "To a person, their attitude and outlook upon life changed. Now, they might have gone back to what they were doing before, but during that month of experimentation, of constantly focusing on using just positive healing words, changed their lives." And what I was hearing John say in the beginning was, first of all, that the change happens not by changing the stuff out here first, but by changing what's going on in here first. And when I change what's going on in here, what happens is the outside changes or begins to change. So thank you, John, for starting the revolution. Let's see, where am I? Anybody else have anything you want to add to that? Let me just end with one of the sentences that we kind of ended with last week. Morning. The realization of form as of God, just take those simple words. The realization of form as of God, or the realization of the body as holding its own divinity, is an important step for all of you. As we end that prayer of unity, I am divine. I always have a little bit of a difficult time with that one. Am I allowed to say that? Is it okay? Is it true? I am divine, but my computer stopped working. Really? Which one is it? I'm divine, but I have a flat tire. I'm divine, but I have a really difficult time getting up this morning. Which is true? The realization of form as of God, or the realization of the body as holding its own divinity, is an important step for all of you. It is so easy to deny the body its true nature. Its true nature is it's a created vehicle, or part of a creative vehicle here for navigating through planet Earth. That's what it's about. It's not something that makes us separate from one another. It can be used that way, but it's not. The one who cannot walk is in a body that is as holy as the decathlon runner. The one who stands tall and claims the light is holy as the one who grovels in darkness. Form is holy, regardless of what you think. Consciousness dictates form, and form is holy regardless of what you think.
Jerry?
Yes.
So that makes me think about how, well, let me see if I can put this in, how I want to put this. I'm a person who, there are times I don't even recognize the color of skin on the person I'm talking to, and they'll walk away and someone will say something about their nationality and I'm, what? I didn't even notice it. But so I think part of this that you're talking about is we bring judgment into every situation that we go into. If we are open, we don't do that. I'm not sure where I'm going with this, but I in our society today, people are attracted, seem to be attracted to certain ideas and thoughts, and that this has become a political thing for us. I don't know where I'm going with this, Jerry. You're going to have to take over, but
okay. Let's thanks. Put it this way, John.
I'm sorry?
Let's put it this way. The judgment produces separation. As soon as I get into judgment, I'm into separateness kind of thinking, either about myself or somebody, it really doesn't matter. Separateness doesn't exist by one place, it exists. If it exists in one place, it exists all over the place. And so that my favorite little Zen poem, the great way is not difficult for those who have no opinions. Stop there for a minute. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make one distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. Matt.
I have a hard time with automatic judgment and finding myself in automatic judgment through experience, through all sorts of things that my culture and my life have created for me. And I don't like it. And this past year, every year I do New Year's resolution. And this past year, one of my New Year's resolutions was that I was going to create a easy stash of $5 bills. Because, you know, every time I come down here to Unity, I get off on Brook Street, and there's usually someone who is homeless with a son or something. And I encounter those individuals at other places. Now, I'm someone who has been involved with the homeless people, and I know more than most people that homelessness has all different types of causes. And sometimes those causes are self-inflicted, and many times they're not. And yet here I am, every time I'm coming off, I automatically am judging someone, I'm judging them whether or not I should be giving them any money or not. I have created this judgment. And so I thought really hard about how can I step out of that judgment. And so my plan was that I would just keep a stash of $5 bills. And my job was not to worry about what was going on in their life. Because it wasn't about them, it was about me. What type of person I want to be. And so what I found was that I was, instead of dreading someone standing there with the sign, I was looking for someone with the sign. And it was such a joy. And I began having these interactions. This past week, I had an interaction with someone who wasn't even holding the sign, but I could tell. And that really flipped it. And then I think there are so many other parts of my life. I wish it were so easy that I could, you know, you find whatever you're looking for. And a big part of it for me is in those areas where I may not be conscious that I'm looking for something. How do I consciously, how do I deliberately, intentionally begin looking for what it is that I want to find? Waking up.
That's exactly what we're speaking of here, right? Consciousness dictates form. Consciousness changes, form changes. Form essentially is the result of conscious or creative thought. I do, you know, you created a different reality, or you will, maybe even better said, on my point of view, is I allowed myself to be part of a creative essence in a different way than I was before. I allowed that to happen. It happened through, when something like that happens with me, it happens through my divine consciousness, higher consciousness. And so much of that is just surrender. I allowed that to happen to me and through me. I didn't make it happen, I allowed it to happen. And that kind of removes the personality from the picture and allows me to see the other person beyond their personality as well. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what they do with the $5. That's their choice. What my choice is, can I do that as openly as I possibly can with an open heart, non-judgmentally, saying, here, I was reminded of, I think it's in the Acts of the Apostles where Peter and James and John are walking into the temple. Somebody's standing, a beggar's at the doorway, asking for money. And John says, gold and silver I have not, but what I have through the power of Jesus Christ, I give you. I bless you. Actually, he said get up and walk, but that's a little bit dramatic on our side of things. Gold and silver I have not, what I have I give you. I give you from my heart, I give you openness, give you truth, give you awareness. And I know you know that. Thanks, man. Yeah.
I once heard a theory about automatic driven. Tell me what you think about it. The idea is that the lizard part of your brain wants to assume that people who are misfortunate are bad people because you're not a bad person, so that should never happen. So I think that person's homeless, they must be bad, but I'm not bad. Tricking ourselves to feel safer.
It's tricky. That little story in the Gospels called the Scribe and the Pharisee, where the Pharisee, who's kind of one of the rich guys, goes into the temple and he stands in front of the altar and he says, "I thank you, God, that I am not like the rest of men. Especially that I'm not like this publican, this tax collector back here." And so he leaves the synagogue feeling very justified. Now the publican, the tax collector, stays in the back of the synagogue and sort of kneels down and says, "Oh Lord, forgive me, a sinner." I don't agree with the language there, but that's beside the point. Jesus looked at the crowd that was around him and said, "Who is more justified in their prayer?" And of course, it made them very, very uncomfortable because they could already see through that he's not without finger pointing that, the Pharisee was a bit of an idiot, and that the publican was just being open to being as honest as he possibly could be in the presence of God. Now, here's the catch. How many of us, and I include myself in this process, after hearing that story would say, "Thank God I'm not like that Pharisee over there." See how tricky that is? Okay.
You live out of a space of gratitude, and I'm walking down the street and see somebody unable to walk. Thank you, God. I mean, that's, I'm judging. It's interesting.
Automatic.
Hey Jerry.
Yes, John. Yes, Jim.
Yeah, just to
Hang on a second, Jim. I need to turn your volume down just a bit. Okay.
that a little better?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, just to perhaps add on what Matt had shared. When I'm in Louisville, because I've been out Southern California for a while, but when I'm in Louisville, working at not working, volunteering at Wayside, what has to happen for me is well, there's two things. I'm going to get really personal here. So my only son spent some time at Wayside. And so I remember one time going to pick him up. He had a doctor's appointment. And I looked up and I said to him, he got into the car, and I said, "Do you know where you're at? This isn't how your mom and I raised you. Do you understand you're in a shelter? Do you understand that?" And he looked at me, "Dad, it isn't all that you think it is." And so when I started volunteering after he came home, I recognized that there's so many different levels of folks who are at Wayside, who are in transition. It's not what I perceived that it was. That's one thing. The other thing is that soon as I get in the vicinity of Broadway, once, you know, once I left my home, I consciously say to myself, when I'm seeing individuals, that's someone's daughter. That's someone's son. Just as I am that too. That's someone. That's not just a face. That is someone. So for me, it removes this veil of better than, less than, separation, however you want to call that. You know, because we're the same. And I just, and so, and it just checks me. So I have to check myself. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Great example.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, Rob.
Real quick. Thank you, Jim. One of the things about the story of the Pharisee that's a little tricky that you pointed out so well, but that also, you know, you can be thankful without being superior. And that's the trap because, you know, when I hear that story, I hear the Pharisee trying to be thankful, but he doesn't aware he's also being superior. And when you see someone who is going down the street who's crippled, or you see someone who's less fortunate, you can be thankful without feeling superior. And so I do want to just, I think there's a subtle process there where anytime we have the superiority thing going on or the judgment thing, that's one thing. But there is a way to be thankful without being superior or, God, I'm so much better than them. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely. That's a
Okay.
great point, Rob. Thank you. And I think what we're talking about there is coming from a place, the difference between coming from a place of lower consciousness as compared to higher consciousness. When I am in higher consciousness, I can be grateful that I've got the ability to be able to walk down the street with two strong legs, right? Without feeling better than. Feeling better than is an emotional state, not a spiritual state. But I certainly can, I can train myself or work on myself to be able to do that, that I can be grateful, the way Rob put it exceptionally well. I can be grateful without being superior. Laura?
I think for me, it's if I'm looking just at myself, I am grateful that I can walk. It's when I compare myself to someone that I see outside of me. It's so I have to keep that focus on, I'm grateful for me for this, not to look at somebody else and make a comparison. Boy, I'm grateful for me. I don't necessarily feel myself superior, but I'm comparing myself to them, which I think that's the fine line for me.
Yeah, I think especially when, for me anyway, also, whenever I get into comparing myself with another person, it's so easy to cross the line into judgment. And sometimes I do that without even thinking. In other words, I think comparison and judgment are probably pretty close to being the same thing. So I don't want to compare myself to you or ask you to compare yourself to me, but it's, I wouldn't say it's inevitable, but we've certainly been trained that way.
Well, and rather than like looking at that person and seeing the Christ in them, you know, it's I see the negative versus what really is true.
I was thinking it'd be like getting a report card. You get all A's, then you're better than everybody else. Am I really? I was going to say I might be smarter, but that doesn't even fit either. Right? I just happened to get all A's and you didn't. This next piece applies to what Janet was talking about a few minutes ago about dreaming. What time we got? Probably a little bit of time. Now, memory of form of who I was or what I was, memory of form must be understood in two different ways. The body you have grown up in and the memory of the body at different ages, as well as the prescriptive memory of what a body should be that is inherited by you through interaction with the collective, and the claim that the body is true nature, which knows itself beyond time. That's really interesting. The body, the claim of the body as its true nature, knows itself beyond time. So it's not just this thing I'm dragging around with me. It's my teacher for this lifetime, maybe other lifetimes. Saint Francis of Assisi called his body poor brother ass. That was his viewpoint of what physical reality is all about. Poor brother ass. Story was that he was one day he found himself being tempted to impure thoughts, and he took off his robe and he jumped into a rose bush and started rolling around in the rose bush to get his mind off, quote, these bad thoughts he was having. So even saints can be a little bit screwed up and neurotic. It kind of gives us permission to be okay. I'm going to do one more paragraph and then we'll do our meditation. Wow, time goes fast, doesn't it? I think it was Judy Collins had a song, and who knows where the time goes. We will explain this for Paul. He has memory of the body at early ages, his fear of the body, his pleasure at the body, the experience of swimming in the ocean, being in the womb, or hiding in fear from an angry parent. The body holds memory. We used to call that cellular memory. The body holds memory. And the identity that has been moored in body qualifies its sense of safety through the physical realm. The one who knows itself in spirit does not discount form, but is unafraid of the ways that the small self might be. The articulation of form as of God, indeed, a process you is indeed a process you undertake, is not divinization in form. It is the, in other words, let me get the last part, last sentence here. It'll make sense, I hope. The articulation of form as of God, indeed, is a process you undertake. It's the reclamation of form as God. It's not something that, you're not making something, it's something that's realization. I am recognizing, I am recognizing that I am God in form. I am a unique expression of divine experience. So are you. Last piece. Because you hold memory and have claimed memory of the body as separate from the source, that's actually held in the body. Even the tissues and the organs hold memory of what they have been claimed as. The whole idea, again, and put this in simplest forms, and again, this is my interpretation. One of our founders, Myrtle Fillmore, created a mantra prayer. I am a divine child of God. I do not inherit illness. Saying that out loud, not as a hope, not as a dream, but as a reality. And what happened was that she was cured of her tuberculosis. She was supposed to die in about a year or so after the diagnosis. I'm a divine child of God. I do not inherit illness.
Jared?
Yes.
Is that paragraph speaking to, you know, you hold cellular memory, are we also holding cellular memory of Christ, God, or that which we came from? Are we holding that cellular memory, and is that how that statement you just made, that
Yeah, Laura, I think there's a couple of ways of being able to deal with that. I can be open to my cellular memory on a lower level of understanding, which is fear, illness, and I can also be open to it in a higher realm of consciousness, which is I am whole, I am healed, I am perfect just the way I am. That gets a little bit tricky when you get into that area because, no, I'll get into that when I just make a discussion that's you can take us too far afield if I get into that one right now. Let's take a minute or a couple minutes. Notice how your energy just shifted just then. You went from a place of thought, figuring something out, maybe even holding on to something, to an openness. Indefinable, still true. Interesting. Split second difference. Close your eyes. Couple of deep breaths. Soften. The truth of my being is that I am a unique expression of divine consciousness. And so is everyone else. And so I allow myself to be open to this truth. I drop all the labels, good, bad, sick, healthy, scribe, Pharisee. I let them all go and allow myself in the simplicity of openness to simply be. And notice the space, the spaciousness that you create. From that openness and that awareness. And to know that by doing so, we are contributing to the healing of the world. May all beings be at peace. May all beings be free of suffering. And may all beings remember who they are, who they truly are. Deep breath. Stretch a bit. Can open your eyes when you're ready.
Thank you, Jerry.
We have gone to a different level of understanding of how we create our own reality. And we have allowed ourselves to have a deeper awareness of that truth and recognize what Course in Miracles suggests every once in a while to stop for a moment and say, how can I see this differently? How can I see myself differently? So thank you all for being here. Blessings. Peace.
Blessings to you. Thank you,
everyone.
Blessings,
Jerry.
Everyone.
Thanks, Blessings. Everyone.
Thank
Thanks,
you, everyone.
Jerry. Happy
Thanks,
Palms.
Jerry.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry, and everyone.
Love you guys.